On this edition of the program, Biden optimism and the money man. Dave Leventhal comes on to talk about the death of small dollar donors. It's all coming up.
This is made possible by Owe Them Bones, Daily Tech News Show, V, and Craig.
Welcome, everybody, to the Politics program for, what is it today? March 27th, 2024, your old pal Justin Robert Young joining you here in Austin, Texas, where I'm going to give all the Biden heads out there, hey, you want to know what? It's been raining for a little bit now, huh? Raining for a little bit, losing. Each and every one of these polls that have come out recently getting dusted up in a lot of the swing states, down big numbers, uncommitted, swinging through, Dean Phillips nipping at your heels. But I'm telling you what, if you support Joe Biden for president, I've got some good news for you. I'm going to give you the optimistic Biden case for November. And should these trends continue, we will all be able to go back to this episode and say, this was always the blueprint. Let's start with some good news here for you that is recent. This is via Politico. The Biden campaign has woken up to some good news with the latest Bloomberg Morning Consult polling, finding that the president has, quote, gained ground against Republican Donald Trump in 6 of 7 key swing states, and significantly in 2 of them. The shift is significant in Wisconsin, where Biden now leads Trump by 1 point after trailing him by 4 points only a month ago. In Pennsylvania, the candidates are tied after Trump held a 6-point lead last month. They are also now tied in Michigan. We continue from Morning Consult. While the poll found that Biden was most competitive in blue wall states, he also did chip away at February's deficit to Trump in Arizona, Nevada, and North Carolina. The 7th state, Georgia, Trump did add to his lead. In some cases, the shift was within the margin of error, and Trump still leads across the 7 swing states, 47 to 43. So, all that being said, why are things moving? Well, if you're the Biden team, all you got to say is, I hope you bedwetters invested in rubber sheets, because we told you this was going to happen. We told you it was early. We told you that the primaries were just a little messy bump in the road. Yeah, we got a little sidetracked with some president stuff, okay? Israel, Gaza, Ukraine. Look, these are things that happen while you're in the big chair. Were they the best things for us? No. But, you know, we're moving on. We told you that the State of the Union was going to be the moment that turned the tide. Everybody said old Sleepy Joe was going to fall asleep at the lectern. And no, he came out like a house on fire. Yelling, screaming, getting in people's faces. That's the kind of vim and vigor that displaces all of this her report, kindly well-meaning old man. Tell that old man that he's kindly and well-meaning. He was an absolute flamethrower. So that's the first thing. Everybody saw the State of the Union, and now they see a virile Biden that's going to fight for him. And I don't know how true any of that is, but that's probably what they would tell you. I'll tell you why I would build an optimist case for Joe Biden. First and foremost, it's the economy, stupid. And the economy is getting a little bit less stupid by the day. go ahead and take a look here at some of these graphs. I got economic graphs here for you. This is Gallup's Economic Confidence Index. It has been underwater since July 2021, when it barely peaked above the waves with 1%. And right now it is on the upswing, 26% underwater. Granted, not great, but still, it is making its way upwards, and that's what you can hope for. How about this? A CBS YouGov poll. How about 1% expecting a recession in October? That was 33. January was 30. And when this was taken in February, 23%. Would not be shocked if that continues to go down, because it seems to match the economic outlook from various professionals. And in the converse, the expect of people that are expecting a growing or booming economy. October was 19%, January is 21%, and currently it is 27%. The soft landing seems to have escaped the Biden curse. You know, the curse that tainted terms like transitory inflation or Putin's price hike. No. Soft landing is something that you want to run on now, because the United States did what it has never done before. It had a big inflationary uptick and didn't need a recession to correct it. And as long as that continues to be true, Biden will be able to enjoy it. Biden will be able to say, look at what I did. I had to clean up the mess of Donald Trump. Donald Trump, that right now there's a big problem with Biden because people don't trust him with the economy. They remember Trump's economy a lot better. But Trump's economy is in the past. This economy is here now. And employment is low, or unemployment is low, which means things are going well as long as there's not a recession. And if they keep getting better, Biden will be rewarded for it. Here's number two. Israel can't attack Gaza until November, right? Right. At some point, something's got to break there. Something's, you know, Donald Trump wrote an op-ed for a pro Netanyahu newspaper in Israel, where he said, finish the job, but do it quickly. Do it quickly. You are losing the world. People do not like you right now. And that's Donald Trump saying it. Not Joe Biden. Not Breonna Joy Gray. Donald Trump in a pro Netanyahu newspaper saying, wrap it up. So regardless of where you are on this, regardless of your politics when it comes to this issue, can it last until November? I don't think so. And if that is off his plate in terms of foreign policy, then that means Ukraine returns to the center of attention, and Biden wants Ukraine to be the center of attention, because the most likely things that happen in Ukraine are either they continue to fight throughout the election, or there's some kind of negotiated peace deal, at which point Biden can say, we stood next to our ally. And as long as Zelensky shuts up and doesn't say anything embarrassing, then he's the winner there. He saw Putin coming. He put a bunch of money and time and effort and logistics into defending the sovereignty of Ukraine. And indeed, Kyiv stands because of Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. Here's the other one. The border isn't really going to be the number one issue in November. Right? Right? Yeah, the border is going to be a bigger deal than it would be otherwise, but it's still a fairly polarizing issue. And Donald Trump is not, yes, he's the guy that made it famous. That's not named Pat Buchanan, but he's not a centrist choice on the matter. If it were another fresh-faced Republican, if it were a Nikki Haley that were pushing this, maybe there'd be a bigger issue. But you still have the ability of a very defined Donald Trump that you can go against. Right? As long as that keeps being right, then, or is right. It's not right now. Let me point that out. The border is the number one issue for a lot of voters. So we are assuming, in the Biden optimistic case, we are assuming that that recedes. That there's other stuff that happens. But here's the number one reason. The number one reason why Joe Biden is the favorite, the optimist case, why you should be going to any and all of your little betting markets, all of those, right? Right now, the price on Biden, tasty. A lot of people seem real confident that Donald Trump is going to be the next president of the United States. Which forgets one thing. Incumbents win. I always bet on the incumbent because if you were to bet on the incumbent throughout the entire history of the United States of America, you would win most of the time. And of course, there's always situations as to why it's not going to happen, or boy, are they in trouble this time? Can you see the metrics? It's going to be really, really close. He looks like he's losing. And then the incumbent wins. And I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. Trump didn't win. And in my Biden optimist case, I'll say, yeah. And he's not going to win again this time either. This is your update brought to you by TakePoliticsSeriously.com. That's where you can go and support this show. Head on over there, get the two bonus episodes each and every week. A reminder that every one of our episodes are now in videoed. We have video versions for all these. See my snappy new haircut on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/politicspoliticspolitics. But that also is for our Patreon episodes too. You get to see me in living color on those as well. Not just, you know, so the Monday episode, the Thursday episode, two bonus episodes each and every week, not only in audio, now in video. You gotta love it. Head on over there right now. TakePoliticsSeriously.com. For only $3, if you'd buy me one cup of coffee a week, so I could sit in your car or sit in front of you if you're watching me on video and talk politics, well, then do I got a deal for you? TakePoliticsSeriously.com. Very, very, very serious story that at least right now does not have a direct political angle, but is something that if you have not seen the video, you absolutely have to. It is gobsmacking. The Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, a critical infrastructure component spanning over 1.5 miles over the Patapsco River, collapsed early Tuesday morning after being struck by a cargo ship, the Singapore-flagged Dali. This incident plunged several vehicles into the river water, and at this time, an 8-person construction crew working on pothole repairs were present on the bridge. Search and rescue operations have been underway, with one individual rescued in critical condition and the search ongoing for 6 others. The bridge's collapse, captured in dramatic social media footage, has halted all vessel traffic into and out of one of the U.S. East Coast's most crucial ports, affecting over 12.4 million vehicles that annually cross the major commuting route. The ship itself, managed by Synergy Marine Group and owned by Grace Ocean Private Limited, was under pilot navigation when it lost propulsion and collided with the bridge's pillar, leading to its catastrophic failure. Despite the bridge being the bridge's pillar leading to, being deemed up to code, The impact highlights the vital importance of infrastructure resilience and safety. The ongoing investigation involves multiple local, state, and federal agencies, including the U.S. Coast Guard and the FBI, which did announce that it found no indication of terrorism. Not really a whole lot of analysis to do here other than all of our love and condolences go out to anybody that was affected by this tragedy. But boy, you know, talk about a moment of fragility where you realize that this beautiful, glittering world that we live in is run on some very, very, very fragile elements. But this ship just goes right into a support pillar and the whole thing goes down. Oh, my Lord. Again, all of our support and love goes out to those affected. Let's flip back to the politics of this, if you don't mind. James Comer, representative and head of the Biden impeachment inquiry, seems to be calling it quits. And he seems like he did it in a fundraising email. We quote, "It's clear Democrats will choose their party over country and the truth at every turn," wrote the House Oversight Chair. "That's why I'm preparing criminal referrals as a culmination of my investigation," adding that new leadership at the DOJ under Trump would prosecute the Biden crime family and deliver swift justice. So the reason why that's very interesting is because normally when there's an impeachment inquiry, it ends with an impeachment. Because if you don't end an impeachment inquiry with an impeachment, that means that your inquiry found that there was not enough to impeach. So you have set a standard. You have not met the standard that is usually not good in the world of politics. And it sounds like that's what's going to happen with Jamie Comer. Here's the other problem, is that there's not enough Republican votes to push forth an impeachment. A reminder that they had to scrape and claw to impeach Alejandro Mayorkas. The Republican coalition in the House is an absolute mess. Regardless of how this investigation went, it doesn't matter if you ain't got the votes. And right now the Republicans have one vote as a majority. One thin vote. That means one mad Republican scuttles anything that would otherwise be on party lines. And that includes the impeachment of Joe Biden. Finally, Donald Trump's Truth Social venture, Trump Media and Technology Group, which operates Truth Social, is set to become a public company under the ticker DJT on NASDAQ following a $300 million merger with Digital World Acquisitions Corporation. The merger was approved by shareholders and Trump is expected to own more than 78 million shares valued right now at $3.5 billion. His shares will be locked up for 6 months with limitations on sale amounts post lockup due to securities laws. So don't expect that to be the big cash windfall that might take care of some of his legal issues in the immediate offing. However, the move could potentially bring Trump a multi-billion dollar windfall eventually, raising his net worth to a record $6.5 billion, according to Bloomberg. The company's debut in the stock market is a strategic move to secure a significant cash infusion. Despite Truth Social's reported $26 million loss in the recent quarter, shares in Digital World surged by more than 20% ahead of the listing. CEO of that company, Devin Nunes highlighted the company's mission to challenge big tech censorship and promote free expression, portraying the venture as a crusade against, quote, the ever-growing army of speech suppressors. So if you want to add that one to your portfolio, DJT, now listed on the NASDAQ. I can't imagine that Donald Trump would have any trouble making money. He's the most famous person in the world and has the ear of half the country. So I can't imagine how crass it's going to get when he is officially out of presidential, like, politics. It's going to be, I mean, he was at NFTs when he was running for office. Hachi machi. That's your update. TakePoliticsSeriously.com is where you need to go. Again, TakePoliticsSeriously.com is where you need to go. The $3 tier gets you 2 bonus episodes each and every week. If there is financial news afoot in the world of politics, you know we got to bring on the money man, Dave Leventhal of Raw Story. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. A delight and an honor to be back with you, Justin.
As it always is. So FEC reports are filed and the news is Joe Biden's fundraising good. Donald Trump's fundraising, not so good. A lot of questions about where money is going. But the numbers, the top line numbers, aren't great. Is there anything that we are missing or maybe over-exaggerating?
Well, first of all, and just the down note before we go back up again, is it is still early. So
yes.
Anytime we talk about money and politics, it's a moment in time. It's horse race politics with dollars and cents signs with it. It's its own thing. So you got to put it in the proper context. But
yeah,
dude, this is absolutely bonkers. We've got one of the candidates who literally, as we're speaking right now, is having to put up 9-figure bonds for criminal trials. That number 91 counts of potential felony wrongdoing. I mean, we have no template for this election. We have no analogy for this election. There is no metaphor that I can offer you that is going to explain financially or otherwise what truly is going on here. And we have this bizarre situation where Donald Trump's personal finances and his political finances are so intermingled, and partially just because of the circumstances, but partially because of him too, in a way that is truly inconceivable, and yet it's reality. So yes, when you look at Donald Trump and Joe Biden head to head right now as we speak, Joe Biden is doing better than Donald Trump, but also Donald Trump is doing better in polls in some key swing states where Joe Biden would love to have the problem of having less money than Donald Trump, but better poll numbers than Donald Trump. So
yeah,
we're at a really weird kind of inflection point at this moment.
It is very interesting because obviously, although it is early in our contest, we're into the second quarter in terms of the battleground of where this is going to be fought. So the information war is certainly out there. And I do think that part of the reason why we are talking about these fundraising numbers, although there is a lot interesting inside of them, is that the Biden campaign can't really talk about excitement amongst their voter base. They really don't want to get into any specifics of things that are happening in terms of international, and the polls aren't great. So there's a lot of, hey, the economy's doing better, and LOL, Trump doesn't raise money.
And LOL, Donald Trump bases his entire political and business and persona existence on the fact that he's rich. And
yes.
So when you have somebody who literally is sort of the embodiment of money for many Americans, whether that's fair or not, whether that's legit or not, you as a Democrat, you're laughing all the way to the bank because Joe Biden's doing better than Donald Trump in that political context. So
yeah,
the PR battle right now, the image battle right now, totally being won by Joe Biden. And that's not a bad thing for him. And it definitely gives him something to talk about and puff his chest out a little bit about and saying, well, all right, yeah, this is won at the polls and the election is won on election day, but
yeah,
hey, we're going in the right direction. Joe Biden's campaign's going in the right direction. The economy is going in the right direction. Job numbers are going in the right direction. Inflation is going sort of kind of in the right direction.
Taking a little wobble on the inflation. But yeah, and that is the beauty of politics, is that ultimately you have to make your argument as loud as you can because nobody else is going to make it for you. Let me delve a little bit closer into the Donald Trump story, because there's something that's kind of been out there that I've found confusing and I really wanted to ask you about. It is a leadership fund that was announced that will fund Donald Trump's campaign, a super PAC, and the RNC in that order. But I don't know how much leadership funds like that are just for the gigantic $250,000+ fundraiser that they're about to throw in Mar-a-Lago, for which this is not that big of a deal because everybody's going to eat from a $250,000 donation that people are making, or if it's also for the small dollar stuff, in which if it goes in the order of campaign, then PAC, which has been paying his legal funds, then the RNC, then you would imagine that the RNC would get paid less. But then again, I don't know how much the RNC counts on presidential fundraising to fill their coffers. Fill us in. How much of this is normal? How much of this is totally outside the pale?
It is totally abnormal. And so let's presume that everyone's brains listening right now have yeah. not melted inside their own skull as
exactly.
they were trying to parse all of this. So if you want to be really technical here, what is being created is something known as a joint fundraising committee, which has a leadership committee inside of it, which also has Donald Trump's campaign inside of it, which also has the Republican National Committee inside of it. And hey, if you wanted to jam pack some other campaigns and other committees in there too, you have the legal right to do so. Donald Trump yeah. has the legal right to do so. And Democrats and Republicans have used these vehicles, these joint fundraising committees, JFCs, as they're called, and other people may be thinking right now, JFC should stand for
something else.
Very different than yeah. joint fundraising yeah. committee, if you will. But be that as it may, you've got a lot of power with these committees because, as you laid out, they can go and they can have a big fundraiser and they can raise crazy amounts of money and then kind of very quietly parcel it out the way that they see fit so that every individual committee is staying within the bounds of the law when it comes to how much money they can actually take in.
Yes.
And mind you, a national party committee can raise a lot more money from you or me or anyone else than a campaign committee can.
Yes.
A traditional political action committee, a leadership PAC, can raise a different amount of money, slightly more than a campaign committee itself. And so on and so forth. And we haven't even gotten into super PACs, which can raise unlimited amounts of money so long as they have a kind of wink, wink, nod, nod separation between themselves and the campaign that they're supporting. But going back to this joint fundraising committee, Donald Trump absolutely can have a giant fundraiser
yes.
and use this joint fundraising committee to fund any of a number of different committees that will be supporting him in the end, whether we're talking politically or even personally to some degree, i.e. legal fees. And he absolutely has the right under current law to prioritize a leadership political action committee, Save America PAC being yep. his flagship leadership political action committee, and have the money go there. So if somebody's sitting down to their dinner at Mar-a-Lago or a fundraiser, and they're cutting a huge check, $100,000. Well, the first X amount of money is going to go toward that leadership PAC to pay Donald Trump's legal bills.
Yes.
As opposed to going to the RNC to help the overall Republican operation or to Donald Trump's own committee to, I don't know, beat Joe Biden and and win the damned election. So,
well, I think the way it's set up, it goes to the campaign first, and then once you're maxed out on the campaign, which is a lower number as you pointed out, then it goes to the PAC. That's like a 5,000 cap, and then as I have read the research or read the reporting on it, rather, the rest goes to the RNC.
Yes, and in this particular instance, that's the case. But Donald Trump can change that. He could
yes.
change it tomorrow if he
yes.
wanted to. And there's no federal law. There's no rule that compels a candidate, Donald Trump or otherwise, to adhere to some sort of rubric for this type of thing. So really, and we've seen this before too, where Donald Trump and a member of the Senate, they'll send out a joint message.
Yes.
Marsha Blackburn, let's pick on her for example. And they'll have a joint fundraising ask. And they'll say, support Donald Trump and support Marsha Blackburn and rah, rah, Republicans. And then you look at the fine print.
Mm.
And if you make a donation of, say, for the sake of argument, $1,000, it'll be set up so that $990 worth of that $1,000 will go to Donald Trump and 1% will go to Marsha Blackburn. When
yeah.
people may be thinking, oh, it's going to be even Steven, it's going to be 50-50. No, you always have to look at the fine print. And these joint fundraising situations, these joint fundraising committees, don't typically scream it from the mountaintops exactly how the money is going to be parceled out or used.
So let's put a pin in that, because I want to get into that when it comes to our larger question about small dollar donations. But you said two different things there. Number one, that it is very not normal for this a joint fundraising committee to be set up the way it is, but that also we use joint fundraising committees all the time. What about this specific one is abnormal?
Yeah, well, joint fundraising committees are normal. Okay.
So okay.
Let's get that out of the way. Not uncommon. Both sides use them, et cetera, et cetera. What is abnormal is this particular joint fundraising committee.
Okay.
And the way, more generally speaking, the way that Donald Trump has set up his campaign finance machine. It's incredibly complex. You have lots of different committees that are all sort of interrelated, but separate entities. They have to disclose their finances, for example, on different forms. And it gets technical quickly, but the practical implication is that Donald Trump can use one of those committees in the context of raising money for his political campaign to, in essence, siphon ostensibly campaign money for a use that is kind of personal, which seems to go against the letter and the spirit of the law potentially when it comes to personal use of campaign funds. Now, if any election law lawyers are listening, they'll be like, whoa, wait, hang on. He's not technically using the money for personal use if he does it this way. Well, that's kind of proving the point. This yeah. is why he's setting it up this way, so that he can kind of do a little bit of an end around what otherwise would be perhaps a bit more of a sticky situation. And he's using this money in a way that is going to benefit him personally, because he gets his legal bills paid for. And it's also going to benefit his campaign, maybe, in the sense that, all right, well, if somebody is donating to his legal fund or for his legal problems, well, they're also donating to his campaign. You know, more money, the better. Rising tide raises all ships. So it's very unprecedented. And this is what makes it so unique, is that we just, again, don't have anything to point to.
To compare this to. Yeah.
Period.
Well, one thing that we have seen is that the Trump campaign, which I think by all metrics has been, at least in terms of X's and O's, blocking and tackling, a lot more efficient than it was in 2016 and 2020, is very much conscious about cash coming in. You've seen them making nice with Club for Growth. Donald Trump did not join the TikTok pile-on, largely assumed because Jeff Yass, one of the big Republican donors, is very much invested, literally and physically, or metaphorically, with keeping TikTok upright. But part of that is because one of the things that we've seen over the last few FEC filings is an attrition in what was once Donald Trump's superpower, small dollar donations. They are not coming in as fast and furious, and they are not coming in at the same dollar amount that they once did in the past. Is this a sign that peak small dollar donations are past, Dave, or are we just at a bit of an aberration for various different reasons right now?
I don't think this is an aberration. Now, the dollars are going to tick up. The numbers are going to tick up the closer you get to election day, because they always do. And,
yeah.
and that's just natural, that when the moment of truth is about to arrive, that people who had been sitting on the sidelines, mañana, well, finally that day has come and they're going to go and donate. But this is not good for Donald Trump, because as you just laid out, this has long been his strength.
Yeah.
And when Donald Trump was getting chided for not raising money from big dollar donors back several years ago during the 2016 campaign, during even the 2020 campaign, it was always, oh, well, their immediate response, we have we have incredible grassroots support. We have the strongest base. It, they used every term that you could to describe the robustness of their small dollar game, which, make no mistake, was phenomenal. And every one of the MAGAites out there who loved Donald Trump, who supported Donald Trump, even if it was $5, even if it was $10, they were making a donation in a way that Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, they were enviable of. And the percentage of the money coming from small dollar donors to Donald Trump versus large dollar donors going to his campaign was really out of whack in a positive way for Donald Trump that helped him significantly. So to your question, well, what does this mean right now?
Yeah.
I think a couple of observations. Number one, Donald Trump has been running for president officially for about a year and a half right now. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's remember, he entered the race formally, which means that he could start raising money directly for his campaign committee in November of 2022. Okay. So he has plucked a lot of low-hanging fruit already. And Joe Biden didn't start fundraising for a while after that. So Donald Trump has already gone to the well, to mix metaphors, multiple times, and he's gotten a lot of money from people who are either tapped out or they don't want to give right now, or, hey, you know, I've already given you 10 donations over the past year and a half. I'm feeling Biden's economy right now. I don't have any more money to give you. So
yeah.
That's one thing. Another thing, too, is that Donald Trump is sending some very weird mixed messages. I literally right before we started talking, Donald Trump blasts out a text message to his supporters. And it says, breaking from Trump, Trump Tower remains mine. Huge victory.
Well, this was a follow-up. There was a text message that went out over the weekend. So this was another side of it. This was, keep your hands off Trump Tower. Trump Tower is mine. Read my emergency message. That was over the weekend. And then, as you pointed out, Trump Tower remains mine. And this, of course, in reference to the bond being reduced from $500 million, which is what it was set at. Now it'll be at $175 million, which it's only in our crazy, crazy political meta that we say is a gigantic relief to Donald Trump that he only has to post a bond for $175 million.
But Justin, what are these messages? Well, these are political fundraising messages.
Yes.
This is not Donald Trump talking about how great he is individually, or this is not some business thing.
These are links to WinRed, the official fundraising arm, digital fundraising arm of the Republican Party.
You click on that link, and at the end of it, in blocky black squares and rectangles with white text, it says, donate this amount if you think Donald Trump is the greatest president of all time. So congratulations, Donald Trump. You get to stay rich. You get to keep your gigantic tower in Manhattan with your name on it in gold. And, oh, yeah, I'm going to give you $50. Like, all right, that's going to work for some Trump supporters, okay, who will give Donald Trump money for any reason. Okay, Donald Trump could literally be providing the most ludicrous reason to give him money in the world, and some of his supporters.
Someone's going to do it. Yeah.
Give money. But even if it's 5, 10, 15, 20% of his supporters who are like, not today, Donald, like, or that's weird, or they see sort of the logical disconnect there, that's actual money. That's real money. So if you're talking about his small dollar donor pool being reduced in size or the money not coming in the way that it did before, that's partially on Donald Trump, too. The messaging has not exactly added up here in the past few weeks.
I got two thoughts, and you tell me your opinion on them when it comes to this. Number one, you touched on a little bit, which is inflation. Inflation affects everything. If you are spending more money at the grocery store, then you just have less discretionary money to spend. That would count the same for your vacation this summer as it would for impulse gifts to Donald Trump. So you are seeing a little bit of an attrition there. My second part is Donald Trump has been used. You mentioned an example of a joint fundraising committee where 99% of a donation would go to Donald Trump and 1% to Marsha Blackburn. But we've seen that in the other way for the last 8 years as well, where you will have people that'll send out emails and text messages that'll be very similar to that. But when you look at the fine print, it's 99% to some random dude who's running for state legislature and 1% to Donald Trump, despite the fact that the headline and all the text is Donald Trump won't stand for it anymore. Give money. The Donald Trump as a fundraising mechanism has not only been around for a really long time, but it's been omnipresent with small dollar donors, and it has been used by the entire Republican Party during that time. You have to imagine at some point there's attrition.
Absolutely. And you get confused as to, well, who's exactly getting what and who did I donate to? It's funny. We pay attention at Raw Story closely to letters that the Federal Election Commission, and I know we're total nerds here, but this is what we do.
This is what, oh yeah, this is why you're here.
The Federal Election Commission sends to candidates where they have taken in a illegally large amount of donations from a single individual. And sometimes, and these are more extreme examples, but you'll understand the point. Mm-hmm. You'll have people who have made 300, 400, 500 donations in the span of a quarter, three months to a candidate. And you can't tell chapter and verse exactly their motivation behind making every single one of those individual donations, except, and some people are probably like, because they're out of their mind. Well, who knows what their deal is? Who knows why they're given the money? But you have kind of a confusing situation in that if somebody makes a donation to one of these situations that you just described, where the donations are split up this way, that way, and the other way. I mean, the campaigns themselves sometimes will get confused and will lose track of how much money they're taking in from Elmer Smith in Topeka, Kansas, who has made hundreds of donations and has just given money every time he gets an email from somebody. And so it's confusing for the campaigns even. I think to the core question of, is there donor fatigue on the other end of the spectrum? Yeah, I do think there is some donor fatigue and that it's just become too much. It's sort of like people who are tuning out of news, political news, because they just can't handle it anymore. I do think that it's just human nature that you're going to tune out of things that you've quite literally, for Trump supporters, have been getting, in some cases, every day for the better part of the past decade. It can be a lot. You start to tune out.
And I would be very curious. I'll be very curious to watch the Biden filings for the next few months, because as good as the number that they filed in February was, and I would suspect that their number in March will also be really good, but it's because they've been building to this as essentially the launch of their campaign. And I'll wonder as we stretch into the summer with the, you know, his enthusiasm numbers not being phenomenal, whether or not we do see things softer than we might have otherwise looking at this very hot start.
Well, you've got a very tortoise and hare kind of situation. Donald Trump was the hare and he was out in front and he's been out in front and he has been sidetracked. He's having to step off the campaign trail and go and do things in courtrooms and deal with this legal nightmare situation that he's in right now. And he's got four criminal cases that are pending before him right now in the midst of the election. So Joe Biden has slowly, some would say, but methodically, gone along and is building steam and surpassing Donald Trump by some key measures. Polling has not been one of them, but money has been one of them.
Yeah.
And as a result, here we are on March 25th, as we're taping this, you know, year of our Lord 2024, and you see sort of a thing happening where Joe Biden, the criticisms of him up to this point are beginning to fade away a little bit. His campaign has caught some steam. And as a result, he's probably feeling caught, well, relative to where we were 6 months ago. I would say, look at the headlines about Joe Biden and where his campaign was and the disarray and campaign is nowhere. This is not an advertisement for Joe Biden, but the fact that he's bringing in more money, and I'm talking very specifically about money.
To me, as an institutional Democratic candidate running against Donald Trump, if he didn't have eye-popping fundraising numbers, that would be a gigantic flashing red light. Like that would be something that I would be very, very surprising to me. Him raising a lot of money is not that shocking. Donald Trump having the small dollar donors peter out a little bit, that to me is a lot more shocking than Joe Biden raising a ton of money.
And also, too, there's the factor that Donald Trump, for all intents and purposes, is sort of a co-incumbent. He is the president of the United States, truly and legitimately, in the mind of about 40 to 50% of Republicans, if you believe the polls that have been taken on this. So when you add that up, you would think that Donald Trump would be doing better financially than he's doing right now. Agree with you completely that if Joe Biden continued to lag and he wasn't doing well financially at this point in the game, that would be a massive, massive, giant, honking, klaxon, red flag of badness. So he's kind of doing what he should be doing, but the fact that he's doing better than Donald Trump in the way that he's doing it, it is definitely a sign of weakness for Donald Trump in a way that also, too, is both surprising because Donald Trump has been so successful in some of these certain ways, and also, too, an indication of just where Donald Trump is right now with his campaign, with his own personal life, and that it's a crazy hot mess right now in ways that he's trying to take advantage of in every way that he can, but reality is setting in. I mean, Donald Trump is having to pay actual money to people because of court judgments, and a trial is going to be starting officially in New York in about 2.5 weeks' time, and these are real things that people have been waiting for a long, long time and are beginning to come to fruition in a way that we can't predict what the results are going to be, but the game is afoot right now, and I suspect that that is going to have some effect on money when it comes to the political game that is also simultaneously in parallel afoot.
Yeah. I wonder how much also the primaries kind of being a bit of a sputtering non-starter also factors into it. That it's that there is right now in the narrative arc of Trump, although you are never more than 5 seconds away from the next gigantic whirlwind, is in a bit of a lull, at least to the calendar. But still, I think that the small dollar thing is huge. And I think there's an absolute reason why Donald Trump has made peace with McConnell world, why you've seen the Club for Growth stuff. This is all not a coincidence in my mind. They need money. They need big donors, and they need to show that the Republican Party is as united as they possibly can behind him to do that. They need to make peace with people who walked off the reservation.
Absolutely. And also, too, the Senate candidates, the House candidates, everyone else who even up to Mitch McConnell were not happy about Donald Trump. And those are fewer and fewer and further between Republicans, but they all know the same thing, that they will live and die by Donald Trump. And Donald Trump's success is their success. And Donald Trump's fundraising success is also their success, too. And without Donald Trump, or a healthy Donald Trump, or a well-positioned Donald Trump, then that raises huge questions about, is the Senate gonna be in play for Republicans? Are they gonna win it back? Is the House going to be lost? And are Democrats going to win that back, especially with a new Republican leaving literally every few weeks at this point? And one wondering, are they going to be able to hold the House majority to the end of this year?
I was going to say they might.
Somebody going to resign? Like, what's next?
So yeah, we might have Speaker Jeffries by April 1st if things keep going the way that they're going now. I will say this, and this goes to the fundraising for the Senate. If the Republicans don't win a majority this year, with the map being so favorable to them, this is once in a generation. The two best spots for Democratic pickups are in Texas and Florida. Hostile terrain, usually fool's gold. At least recently in Florida, it has not been to their advantage. And they got a lot of places where Republicans can pick up. If the Republicans can't get it this year, that's a massive problem.
Absolutely. And it just so happens that at least in a couple of places, the key Senate races are also key presidential swing
primary
states.
Yeah.
So you've got
swing states, yeah.
Double the fun and double the financial fun. And you know, you look at a state like Pennsylvania too, which is so, you know, very much in play on both
McCormick
ends.
Versus Casey there.
Exactly. Presidential and Senate. And, you know, an interesting statistic came up that Donald Trump's fundraising pace there in Pennsylvania, among people who are from Pennsylvania who are giving to him, has been sliding. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette had a very eye-opening article on this just in the past day. And, you know, Donald Trump, we talk about national numbers all the time, but Donald Trump is also needing to pay attention to what's happening at the state level and how his financial health is looking in individual states. Because if you don't have that level of requisite excitement and financial energy that's coming from a particular state, that doesn't portend that you are going to lose or win the election one way or another, but it is a canary in the coal mine. It is a bellwether. It is something that should give Donald Trump pause that his numbers are going not in a great direction in a state like that, which is going to be so essential to his victory if he is to win the presidential race in November, and will be very essential to Republicans taking back the Senate, if ultimately. So they'll be paying attention to those types of things too.
Well, we will keep an eye on all of it. Thanks to the wisdom and the guidance of our friend, Dave Leventhal of Raw Story. What are you guys working on over there?
We're working on so very much. I think one story that everyone should check out is one we just published today. The headline is, quote, "Don't have enough," end quote. Wealthy Trump allies balk at helping Donald pay legal bills. We talked about 15 members of Congress, including some very well-known senators, and put the question to them. Matt Laszlo, our congressional correspondent, did. Hey, are you going to help Donald Trump out? Are you going to help pay his legal bills if he asks you for some money? And these are senators who might have $100 million to their name or whatnot. And, you know, I'll give you the cliffhanger there. Go check out the story. But let's just say that they gave some curious answers as to what their plans were for the future.
Well, this is certainly going to be a contest, the likes of which we have never seen. And the fundraising part of it will be a huge, huge factor to watch. Dave Leventhal, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that is our show. Politics, 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 hosted by me, Justin Robert Young, for Dog and Pony Show Audio. If you would like to thank our good friend, Dave Leventhal, you can do so. px3guest.com. That is letter P, letter X, number 3, guest.com. That'll bring you to his social media. Of course, find, follow, and share video clips of the show. TikTok is Justin R. Young, for now. Instagram is Justin R. Young. YouTube is Politics, Politics, Politics. Twitter is PX3Tweets for the show. Justin R. Young for me. You can email the program, theyoungamerican@gmail.com. And you can find this podcast to send to your friends, family, and clergy, PX3podcast.com. Support me with a one-time donation, paypal.me/payjury. Venmo is Justin-Young-20. Cash apps, PX3Cash. And you can find our P.O. Box to send me anything you'd like. P.O. Box 153184, Austin, Texas, 78715. You can always get our bonus content at TakePoliticsSeriously.com. $3 tier gets you 2 bonus podcasts per week covering all the news that we miss on our free podcasting schedule. And our Titanic $10 tier gets your name right at the end of the podcast like these fine folks. Sam, John, Niemeister, Edwin, and Vote Gloria Young for King of the New World Order. Brian, Edison, Jeremy, A Dog Named Checkers, Sarah Genie, Spider, Matthew, Dr. G, Dustin, Brad, D-Laser, Nick, Just Another Pilot, Middle-Aged Mike, Utah, Jimmy, Montana, The Jen, Alo, D-Really, Andrew, Lisa, Fat Tony's PJs from New York, Devon, The CFP, Gloria Young, my mom, Gray Zone, Peepaw, Jay, Neil, John, DP4, Bongo, Neil, his nerdiness, Charles, Audrey stole Adler's spot, Darren, Idris Arslanian, Berkeley Steven, Nomadic Terran, Molly's delightful demeanor, Adam, Chief Andy, Robert, Casey, and Paul. You want your name read on this show? Well, the one place to do it. Take politics seriously. .com. On our Friday edition of the show, the next in our free feed, we will speak with progressive campaign consultant Annette Shanker Osorio. She is back on the program. I think we had her on in 2022, but this one is great. Not good, great. It is exactly the kind of interview that I love to do. It is about X's and O's and blocking and tackling, her out in the field doing actual focus groups to test different messages, how things are framed or, in her opinion, should be framed. We touch on everything. Reproductive rights, Gaza. If you're on the conservative side, listen to it and know what they're doing across the river. If you are on the progressive side, listen to it and understand how things are being organized currently. But that's Friday. Till then, this is our old pal Justin Robert Young saying, some shows talk about politics, others talk about politics, and still more discuss politics. But this is the only show that dares discuss. Oh, three.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Dog and Pony Show Audio.